Blog Talk Radio.
Is our health sustained by taking COVID-19 vaccines? We're going to discuss that tonight and see what we can come up with when we put our African heads together. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have open conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you are on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shibaka, who, like me, is an UNU member. Peace, Brother Shibaka. How you doing?
Greetings, Sister Q, and thank you for having me, and greetings to the family. I hope that we have a very informed and stimulating conversation tonight.
I'm sure we will. This is something that a lot of people want to know right now. So, Brother Shibaka, tell us, Is our health sustained or maintained by taking these COVID-19 vaccines?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question, sister. Let me do a sound check to make sure that you can hear me and our listening audience. Can you hear me very clearly at
yes,
this level
I can
of
hear
talking?
Very well.
All
yes,
right.
I can
thank
hear you.
Thank you very much. Well, let me, you know, when we talk about health, we usually have to put it in a context. Otherwise, we could be here all night and people can be arguing that's not health. All right, so I'm going to define it and give a context how I would like to see it. And then in talking about health, I got to also put it in the context of the United States because that's where we are right now, and that's where this program is being broadcast. I would like, for our purposes, is just to say that, you know, health or being healthy as a state of physical, mental, and social, spiritual, and emotional well-being in which diseases, all right, and frailty and debility are absent. In other words, anything that impacts our life that creates us not being in well-being, all right, that I will define as health. But notice I added the component of spiritual, emotional, as well as physical and mental. All right, and I think those four or five things have to be there in order to have optimum health. Now, can that be achieved? Yes, go ahead, sister.
No, I was going to say I agree with you on that. So, yeah.
Okay.
We don't take it
right.
like that, but that's a very good way to look at it.
Right. And I'm going to try to put it in the context of trying to achieve those things into the United States if they can be achieved. But let me show some opposition, which makes it very difficult for it to be achieved. All right, why? Why do I say that? In the late 1800s and early 1900s, Harvard University, you know, one of the prestigious universities in this country, had courses, all right, had courses how to eradicate any group it considered substandard. Now, these were courses being offered at Harvard University around the late 1800s and early 1900s. All right, keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Gamble of Procter & Gamble, all right, the founder of Procter & Gamble, was a eugenicist. That's someone who believes substandard people need to be eliminated, or substandards need to be eliminated from the social pool.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler studied Dr. Gamble, Dr. Gamble and the research that was done at Harvard University to apply his eugenics on the Jewish people. Okay, now remember now, he didn't study what they were doing in Russia. He didn't study what they were doing in Poland. He didn't study what the Belgians were doing in the Congo. He studied the United States, Harvard University,
right.
and Dr. Gamble. Okay, I want to put this in context. Social engineering up to the time of 1973, and the reason I call it social engineering, all right, because of the syphilis experiment, was rampant. We just didn't know about all of this stuff. And now what are we faced with? We are faced with scientists have evolved or revolutionized to the era in which DNA research can now identify specific genetic markers that can delineate or differentiate between certain groups on the planet. So that means then if I am a African person born in the U.S., okay, and there are some people who are doing research, all right, and feel that I should be eliminated because I am substandard, then there are genetic markers which can be identified such that pathogens can be genetically engineered to attack people with those markers to be able to eliminate. So I'm saying all this to try to give a context in which we're trying to reach optimum health based on the definition that I stated earlier, all right, and that we're basically in a society that is not concerned about the health of everyone. And in fact, whatever it defines as substandard, it will use the tools at its disposal, all right, to try to eliminate, all right, what we consider health. Now, let's talk about what
Chewbacca.
Can
I just say right here, you said Dr. Gamble, Procter and Gamble. And
right, the founder.
The Procter and Gamble company that makes so many chemical products. And I'm thinking they could be putting stuff in those products to target people based on their genes, because anything you apply on your skin is going to wind up in your skin.
Can be wind up absorbed by your skin. Exactly.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was he and, you know, Harvard University. You know, and this is documented. You know, in fact, you can go on the internet and get this information. In fact, I don't want people to believe me. In fact, maybe it's a good time to put my disclaimer. I want to let everybody know now that I am not a medical doctor. I am not a medical researcher. I am not a virologist. I am not an epidemiologist. I am none of those things. All right. I do not conduct biological research. All right. Or pathogenics research. I am just a person who may have had some research training, which I am applying, but you don't really need that. All you need to do is read and be able to think. And now is expressing some views as a result of reading content and sharing with those in hope that, you know, we can at least have a dialogue or a discussion so that they can share with me what they found. Because the information about Harvard University, all right, now that's just not one university that was involved in that. You know, some of the other top universities was also involved too, but this is one article that I saw that I kept. I didn't go to any others, because if you got one, you probably got another. All right, but it was in the context of the United States coming out of slavery, okay, enslaving African people, all right, just 50 years out of annihilating the indigenous population here. I think, as you know, if they got a million people of native ancestry here, you would be high on the count. And now, after over a decade, the African population has not increased from 12 to 13% of the population in almost 20 years. We've been 12 to 15% of the population. We were the largest growing population in America, next to Hispanics were next to us. We haven't done anything. So they found out how to sustain that population, and eventually they're going to find out how to gradually decrease that population. This is, again, Chewbacca speaking. This is speculation on my part. I have not found any information directly connecting that. It's just correlations of information, all right, that I've obtained, which suggests that might be happening.
Okay.
Now, let me say something about what you alluded to earlier, and that was the vaccine. Let me make it perfectly clear, and if anybody in the listening audience dispute this, then please, I want you to call, and I want you to show me your information. But vaccines have never been meant to cure anything. Let me say that again. A vaccine has never been designed or created, all right, to cure anything. It's not designed for that purpose. Its sole purpose is to excite, stimulate the immune system, all right, if the immune system have them be sluggish or slow, pending an examination to say that a person has been infected with a pathogen. All right, so the vaccine is to stimulate that immune system, which will take care of itself. All right, now notice what I chose my words very carefully. It does not, it does not cure anything. It stimulates our own body mechanism, all right, to go on the attack, to protect it from any pathogen that invades it. That's what the that's all the vaccine does. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, in the context, in the context of the United States, all right, the United States uses a system in which it does not attempt to try to cure, in spite of the fact that it might have produced some vaccines. Its objective is to treat diseases. Its objective is not to cure diseases. When we start talking about Eastern and African methodology, which attempts to try to make you healthy physically, mentally, socially, all right, spiritually and emotionally, then we're talking to cure. But if we're talking about drawing a pill, shooting you up with radiation, giving you chemotherapy or surgery, that is only to address a symptom that the disease might be manifesting itself, such that since it is not cured, some manifestation of it will return later on in the future. Because medicine as it is practiced here, and this is United States, which is considered a Western country, they don't even practice it like this in Europe. All right, profits from that. In Western Europe, they have socialized medicine. So, you know, the physicians, pharmaceuticals can't profit but so much. But over here, they can really, you know, go havoc. All right, and it's designed to make money. It's not really designed, all right, to cure you, because otherwise you wouldn't be getting those blood pressure medicines, all right, to last you for life. You wouldn't be getting the pills for diabetes or the insulin that you have to take for life. All right, and as you're taking these, particularly in the area of diabetes, what that does is inhibit your pancreas, which is responsible for producing the insulin, from functioning. And eventually, if it doesn't function, it will eventually die. All right, so the thing is not necessarily to enhance. I don't want to make people mad, and you know, there might be some people here who are involved, you know, in the health profession. I'm not talking at you, because you have no power in that. You know, you are. Are a person that is trying to survive, all right, and you follow orders, all right? Mm-hmm. If you want to maintain yourself, to be able to feed, clothe, and shelter yourself, you have to follow orders, okay? So I'm talking about as we see and we grow, and I think, let me say here that I think Ulu has probably the best solution to get us out of this quagmire, but right now you just don't have that kind of, you don't have that kind of strength to resist. So, Eastern medicine, African medicine, attempts to do those, address those areas that I address, and probably more. The Western will just want to give you a pill if you got a headache, not sit down, relax, focus, think, meditate. You know, I want to get that pill because I want this thing to be over quickly. And let me stop here in case you want to follow up with something.
Yeah. What is the COVID-19? How did we get up to where we were with this COVID thing?
Well, thank you for the question, and it's a good question because I think people just hear the term, you know, they turn on the television, they hear COVID-19, all right? Mm-hmm. And some people believe that COVID-19 is the pathogen or virus that is responsible for the disease. No, COVID-19 is the disease. COVID-19 is a disease. It's not the virus, all right? The virus responsible for producing the disease COVID-19 is called SARS, all right, CoV-2, all right, which is short for severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2. All right, so it's short. All right, that is the name of the virus which is responsible for producing COVID-19. Now, COVID-19 comes from that virus that I just named. But see, there's been a lot of coronaviruses. Several of them has been noted in the past to be able to infect humans. Because most of the coronaviruses are found in animals. In particular, the coronavirus that apparently is responsible for COVID-19 was supposed to be found in a bat, but that's not exactly true. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. but mostly your viruses are coronaviruses are, you know, in animals. They do not impact. They do not impact humans. All right, but you know, several of them do cause an infection, and maybe to the point of getting you sick, and maybe to the point of being epidemic. All right, which you have to then take some precaution. All right, how we got here? That's a good question. From what we know, the coronavirus, which is a virus mostly found in animals, which also those that have passed to infect men or infect humans are responsible for your average cold. I mean, some colds come from the coronavirus. They don't last long. Okay. They don't infect men to create a problem where you have to have people locked up and quarantine people. No, you have a cold, you know, you lay down, your immune system take care of it. All right, the reason that you get the colds repeatedly is because the virus mutates, and when the virus mutate, in other words, change its genetic form, the antibodies that you have, which is responsible to neutralize the effect of the infection, doesn't recognize it, all right? So therefore, it will not attack it, okay? It attacks what it knows because it has a memory of what comes into it, so it will attack what it knows. All right, so you get the colds. That doesn't mean new antibodies are produced. And so, you know, the cold is over in a few days. The coronavirus is like that. All right, so there's been a history, but probably more is what people have learned in severe pandemics or epidemics that have happened in the past two decades. Number one is, I said this was SARS-CoV-2, so there was a SARS-CoV-1, all right? That SARS-CoV-1 came up, interestingly, in the Far East, okay, in around 202 to 203. And what they found was that it was a coronavirus that was carried by a bat. This coronavirus infected what they call a civet, a civet, and I may be pronouncing it wrong, C-I-V-E-T, but that, if you look at the critter, it looks like the cross between a cat and a raccoon. It's funny-looking critter, but, you know, in China, in China makes a good meal. Okay, so they found the intermediary animal that went from bat to this cat-like creature, and then this cat-like creature, all right, infected humans, all right. So they found the pathway. It took them about 4 or 5 months, maybe 4 or 5 months to identify this intermediary. Because like I said, the virus, most animal virus, has no impact to us except as it evolves, all right? But we have to constantly be in contact with those things so that when it evolves, because the virus is very smart. Well, I don't like to say it like that because it's also claimed to be dead or not alive. Right. So. Let me watch the words that I use. All right, so anyway, they found the trace of it, all right, back there in 2002. All right, and that knocked out, you know, things had to go up. They had to quarantine some folks and do some other stuff too. All right, but they found that was the one that that jumped from animal to humans, causing, you know, some severe sickness, pneumonia-like condition. About maybe 10 years later, around 2013, 2014, MERS appeared. Now, MERS is the Middle Eastern, it's M-E-R-S, and what that stands for is the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, you know, COVID, coronavirus. All right, that blew up around the Middle East. All right, what they found out was that, again, the bat was the predicator who created the infection, but it infected a camel. All right, and then the camel infected, you know, people who used the camel. Okay.
Okay.
And I grew up around the Middle East. All right. But now, what's interesting about this particular virus? Because see, there's two theories that's about this virus. One of them is that this virus had a natural origin. In other words, it evolved from animal and eventually came and infected man. The other theory is that it probably was developed in a lab, escaped the lab, and then infect man after it escaped. I tend to hold to the latter, but that's my personal belief. All right, but it says, but one of the things about what I said earlier about escape, about being natural, is that they have not found the intermediary animal. In SARS-CoV-1, it was bat to the cat-like creature that infected man. Mm-hmm. In MERS, it was bat that infected the camel, all right, mm-hmm. which infected man. But right now, after a year and 7 months, they have not found the intermediary virus, because the coronavirus in the bat does not look like the coronavirus that we are currently faced with. All right?
Okay.
So so it has had to, there has to be something in between if you want to hold to that theory. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the other theory?
Okay.
All right? What about the other theory? Well, I tend to hold to that, and let me tell you why. I might be speaking fast because I know that we might be running on time, but, you know, if people got questions, please, brothers and sisters, call
in. Yeah,
I'm
checking for questions. With a question.
All right, call in. I want you to call in. All right. The accidental release or escape of a pathogen from the Wuhan virology lab in Wuhan, China. Well, let me give you why and tell you why I think that we got something here. Peter Daszak, Daszak, is the president of EcoHealth Alliance. What that business does is specialize in monitoring virus research all over the world. In 2004, 2013, NIH gave them some money. EcoHealth Alliance, you can look this up on the internet, don't take my word for it, some money to fund coronavirus research. Okay. The Wuhan lab was one of the facilities that was funded by my man, Peter Daszak, or the EcoHealth Alliance.
Okay.
All right? Keep that in mind. NIH gave him the money. This is early 2014. Via NIAID, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, headed by our boy, Anthony Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci. You heard of him, right? Okay. He was responsible to pass on this. All right. 2014. Later in that year, Barack Obama, all right, put a moratorium on what they call as gain-of-function research. This was latter 2014. Early in 2014, there's an exchange of money going from an NIH to EcoHealth Alliances to fund virus research and corona, specifically coronavirus research. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said all that, you know, I'm trying to, you say, well, Shabak, you trying to find a smoking gun? No, the gun is already smoked and loaded. It was shot. Okay. All right. So President Obama, all right, put a moratorium on it so there would be no gain-of-function research. What gain-of-function research would be that you would take a virus that is not harmful to man and you would doctor it up to see if it could become harmful to man. What you do is try to accelerate the environment and the process by which viruses jump from animal to animal to human. By doing that, that means that you could build an antidote if you saw the results of the research. That's what they claim.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that you develop a biological weapon, too, all right, as a result of that. But they wanted to say, but let me not be too negative. Let's say they was interested in trying to find out if we speeded up the process, the evolutionary process, of this virus, then we would see what is the possible outcome. You know, who would it have to infect? What it would have to infect before it infect man?
Mm-hmm.
And then once we identify that, we could do this. But now, know, this stuff can really, you know, you can't make this stuff up. In December of 2015, Dr. Ralph Barrick, who was a researcher at the University of North Carolina, all right, collaborated with Bat Lady. All right, now Bat Lady, that's the name that's given to her because she was the head scientist at the Wuhan Virological Laboratory. Her name, her real name is, and I'm going to mess up over this name, is, you know, is Shi Yin Li, you know, S-H-I, you know, Z-H-E-E-N-T-I-L-I, something like that, all right? She was a top scientist, you know, at the Wuhan Laboratory, and she collaborated with this guy, Ralph Barrick, all right? So in December 12, 15, they put out a paper, and this is the title of the paper, A SARS-like cluster of circulating bat coronaviruses shows potential for human emergence. That means it can infect humans. This is December of 2015. I'll spell the name for you folks. You go out there and you throw it on the internet, you get it. So, you know, say, you know, call me a liar. The name again is Ralph, R-A-P-L-P-H, Barrick, B-A-R-I-C, and just put Bat Lady. You don't have to spell it because I'm going to mess up the woman's name, Bat Lady, and, you know, and put December 2015. This thing will come up. It'll pop up. All right, so they have identified that, you know, by genetically manipulating the virus, that it could infect me. And you might say, well, how did it do that? Because, number one, did they have human subjects? Of course not. That would be unethical. Right. What? Wouldn't you say that? It would be unethical, right? Yeah, it would be. But no, this is what they did.
Yeah, it would be unethical.
This is what they did.
But that never stopped them before.
Never stopped them before, but it ordered, you know, because of the research and, of course, the money coming from NIH, what they did was genetically engineered some mice such that the ACE or ACE2 receptors, all right, genetically modified them so that they had ACE receptors on the bronchial and nasal and throat passages of the mice. In other words, it was genetically engineered to have that. Now, the ACE receptors are those things which the spike cone, that's the coronavirus, attaches to. You know, when they talk about, you know, the coronavirus getting the spike protein, well, the spike protein is supposed to be attached to this ACE. Right, that's what they're talking about. This is back in 2015. Mm-hmm. We ain't talking about
Brother,
the 2019.
Ivanka,
yes.
Finish this thought. We got somebody on the line. So finish this thought and we'll go to that. I think we're going to miss the music tonight because you got a lot packed here.
All right. Thank you. All right.
So you want me to go ahead and take the call or are you going to finish that thought?
Yes, please. I can continue.
Okay. Hold on a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, caller with the last four digits, 7204, and state your name and where you're calling from, and then your question or comment, please.
Well, good evening to y'all. How y'all doing this evening? This is Deborah calling from Virginia. Okay.
Greetings, Sister
Peace,
Deborah.
Good evening, Sister Deborah.
Good evening. And I thank you for this conversation is well needed for our people. Two things I want to discuss, though, is that that's not discussed a lot out here is how many people who have taken the vaccine have died afterwards. I would like to talk about that and also the ingredients in the vaccine. I think those are very two important things to talk about. And y'all have a beautiful evening. Thank you so much for having me in conversation.
Thank you,
Sister Well needed.
Yeah, thank you, Sister
Deborah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a very important question. The number, they have the CDC have on their website, and I was going to mention that number down, and even I am a little behind. The last time I checked, and this is the CDC's website, they call it VAERS, V-A-E-R-S, and that website is responsible, and this is where you would need to go if in any if you experience, you know, some adverse reaction, all right, and then you would go there and report it, either your doctor, yourself, or someone, all right, you would go there and report the reaction. And the last time I checked, it's about nearly about 100,000 injuries. But of those injuries, and it might be more than that because I haven't checked since the end of May, about May 24th, 25th, I believe. At that time when I checked, according to them, there had been at least 4,500 deaths of people after taking the vaccine for 2 weeks. So if it was 2 weeks, after 2 weeks, you know, they transition. Now the way they in fact, you remember that probably the baseball player who died a couple of weeks after he his name will come to me in a minute.
Hank Aaron?
He died. Hank Aaron. I'm sorry. Yeah, Hank Aaron died. All right. They said he had a heart condition or something like that. But these are some of the symptoms that heart up. I mean, he had no problem, but after he took the vaccine, he had that condition. So, and then the problem, particularly in Sister DeVere's question, is that they don't do an autopsy. They don't do an autopsy, so you don't know exactly, you know, what they die of. And on CDC website itself, it'll tell you, all right, that most of the deaths caused by COVID-19, 94% of those are what they call comorbidity. What they say is it's 2.9 comorbidity. What that means is that almost three, let's round 2.9 to 3, almost three other diseases are present when a person has COVID and die, and that only 6% are just strictly COVID-related. So that means that if you got 100 people, all right, 94% and they get infected with cause and get sick and die, transition, all right, 94 of them would have other diseases, at least on average, three other diseases, okay?
Right.
And if that was 1,000 people that died, okay, if 1,000 people that died, all right, then you got 940, all right, and that, you know, just put that zero, add that zero to it, so and instead of having 94, you would add 940, okay, that died out of 1,000, so you would have 60 that died from just COVID. Entirely about 940 would die as a consequence of multiple diseases. Now, let me enhance that a little bit more to put some context to it, is that 70 to 75% of black people in this country, you can get it from CDC, you know, are comorbid.
Okay.
They have multiple diseases. All right. That's 75%, and that, you know, maybe a fourth of the population might be what you consider somewhat healthy. All right. So that means, and then we also make up about at the beginning of the pandemic, we made up 75% of the fatalities. All right, so we had made up 75% of the fatalities, only 12% of the population, 75% of the fatalities. All right, and then 94% of those people who died were comorbid. In other words, they had other diseases. All right. So what was the other part of her question? She had another one I wanted to address to. You remember?
Oh, no. Keep talking. It'll come to me. She wanted to... I'm not getting it right now.
It'll come to me.
I actually heard what she said too, and she wanted to know. I'm not sure. Let me see if I can get her back to ask the second part. So,
but anyway,
DeBar, are you there? your second part? Okay. I don't think she did.
Well, that's all right. We'll call back and it'll come to us. But anyway, Veers is, she was talking about Veers. There are 4,500 mm-hmm. people that have died and about, you know, close to 100,000 injuries. These are other than deaths. Okay, but now mm-hmm. let me tell you about Veers because, see, that is not reliable. All right, and what do I mean by not being reliable? Okay, there was a study that was done. Okay, that study that mm-hmm. was done, this was back there in 1986. It was a study that was done, I think 86 or 96, I can't remember it. I'll think about it. The study said that there was criticism of CDC because it says that it wasn't posting the injuries to vaccines correctly and that it may mm-hmm. have been only recording 10% of those reported vaccines. Now, mm-hmm. I want you to listen to that. All right. 10%, all right, of the, yeah, it was a Harvard study. Interesting. It was a Harvard study, which was commissioned mm-hmm. by the government. Okay. It was called the Lazarus Report. So people, if you want to, you know, get into the stuff, the Lazarus Report, go there. All right, the Lazarus Report, and this is on the Veers, and this Veers is what is manned by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. All right, and so they said, and this was done in December of 2007, and that study went on until September of 2010. Okay. And mm-hmm. one of the principal or investigators was this guy named Lazarus and a few other people. And from that, it says that less than 1% of all adverse reactions to the vaccines are actually submitted to Veers. That means then 99% were not submitted. So now you take this 4,500, add two zeros to it, and we might have a reliable accounting of how many people have actually died. Might. Mm-hmm. All right. I can't say because, number one, Veers has been criticized for almost over 20 years. It hasn't updated mm-hmm. its system. So instead of 44, you might have 450,000 people that might have died. And people, you know, might say, well, we've had, you know, about 130 million people that have been vaccinated. Yeah, but you got what? 400 people that might have died, and the injuries, mm-hmm. well, you add two zeros on that, so now you're up into the millions of injuries, okay? You know, you could have almost 10% of the people who've been injured as a consequence of this, of these vaccines. All right, so that was the, you know, just put it in your thing, Harvard study, Veers, V-A-E-R-S, the Lazarus Report, and, you know, this stuff pops up, and, you know, so you can, you know, either make a lie out of me or, you know, confirm what I'm saying. Now,
Brother Shabazz, between those two sets of numbers, though, based on the number of people that they say died from the virus, the COVID-19 itself, and it turns out that only 6% of the number that they had actually died, and then or actually died from just COVID, they think, the numbers from SARS, from Veers, of the number of people who possibly died from the vaccine or the gene mm-hmm. therapy, mm-hmm. more people died from the gene therapy than from the disease. If I'm hearing the numbers correctly.
If we can get the CDC to say that they need to upgrade their system, and that they, in fact, agree with the report that came out a couple decades ago that they only reporting just 1% of those injuries from vaccine. And particularly now they've gotten, just if you take the 4,500, if you take all of the injuries of all of the vaccines that were given and that were reported by CDC, all right, you barely get over 100. Now, we've gotten already that they have claimed 4,500. That's if you take all of it, You know, you take all of them. Go back as far as you can when they started administering diseases, inoculating you against diseases, and then on up to the present time, you know, you get maybe about, a half a percent of what you got right now of diseases, which is 4,500 people. All right, and that's not taking a 1% that. But let me tell you something about the diseases. I told you that the 96% of those were cold forward, but they never did the autopsy, so you essentially don't know what they died of, all right? But it's easy to say that they died of COVID because they tested. Now, let me say something about the test, and let me say something about these numbers of infection. It's mind-boggling.
Right. Okay.
All right. The number of people, and this is on the CDC website. I'm not taking anything. I've been strictly on that website. These are the estimated COVID infection survival rates. Survival rates. If you happen to be a child from 0 to 19, your survival rate, if you caught COVID, your survival rate is 99.997%. You take 100 people and they caught it, and you between that age rate, you basically nobody dies.
Right.
99.997%. Okay. If you happen to be between the ages of 20 and 49, this is on the CDC website. Shabak ain't making this up. Go there. You know, talk about the estimated COVID infection survival rate. So just throw that into that search engine. This stuff comes up. If you're 20 to 49, 99.98%. Basically, you don't die from that either. All right. If you happen to be 50 to 69, 99.5%. Okay. All right. So, you know, a half a percent dies. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you happen to be over 70, 94.6%. All right, now we're getting up to the ages that are critical, and this is what you expect because a lot of these people who have died and a lot of these people who were comorbid, you know, were elderly people. That's why you see such a large number of them death, all right, coming out of that, you know, because, number one, the immune system is overtaxed. They've been living in a highly polluted environment. You know, we got all kinds of, you know, airplanes leaving all across the country. The air is polluted. The water is polluted. The meat is polluted. You know, and your body is trying to sustain you with all that stuff in you. All right. So right now, on average, on average, only about 99.74% of, if you take everybody, lump them together, survival rate. So essentially, if 100 people caught any age, caught the virus, 99. Almost 100 out of the 100 would live.
Okay.
Okay, so that means a small percentage are dying. You say, well, wait a minute. What's going on? Well, that's the propaganda from the machinery. All right, now I know that people have been dying. Shabak is not saying that people have been dying. Shabak is not saying that your loved ones have not died. Okay? But I'm saying that with the rate that they're giving, you know, by mixing the comorbidities in with the COVID, it gives the impression that there are more deaths caused from COVID, all right, than what is really going on. Yes, we know that COVID killed at least 6% of those who caught the disease. We know that COVID may be assisted, but may not have been the principal cause of death for the other 94%. We don't know that because, number one, there were no autopsies given. All right. So we accept those facts. But this is coming from the CDC's own website. Don't beat me up. You beat up the CDC. Don't beat me up. All right. That's their numbers. It's not my numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, let me stop. Is there any more people that have some questions? Or did you have any more questions you want to ask us?
I don't see anybody else on the board with a question at this point. But it's almost 10 minutes. We only got about 10 minutes left. So do you want
go ahead.
Tie this up and how you see that the ULU model. You did mention earlier that
I want to tie it into that model, but let me just make one other additional point for the next, at least for a minute, and that is there was a question that was posed to me about is there a possibility that the vaccine injections may produce sterility, particularly in women, particularly black women, all right? And, you know, my question is I can't answer it. I have no proof of that, all right? I have anecdotal where I've heard people say that on TV or on the internet, all right, but there was no confirmation or verification that, in fact, what they said is true. However, the National Institute of Health, National Center for Biotechnical Information, okay, did a study. I love this study. In June 2019, what the study reveals is that the ACE, remember I told you, the ACE receptacle, ACE2 receptacle, it's a protein, and it attaches to the spike protein. That ACE, everybody used to think that the ACE receptor is just in the nasal lining. It's all over the place. It's all over the place. It's in your lungs. It's on your skin. All right?
Okay.
It's in your heart. All right. Now, not only is it in your heart, it's also in the ovary, the uterus, vaginal center, the placenta of a woman. Okay. Now, let me point this out, and then I'm going to tie this to Ulu. You know that when you get the shot, you know that, and by the way, they finally admit that this is not just strictly a respiratory disease. It's a vascular disease. What I mean by that is that, you know, your blood vessels, you know, capillaries, arteries, and that kind of stuff, you know. Where do they give you the shot? They give you the shot in your arm, right? Do they give you a spray up your nose, or do they give you a spray on your throat so it can, you know, attaches to the receptacles on your throat and your nose?
No,
they give
put
you
it
a shot
in your
arm, right? They put it in your blood, all right? And then these ACE receptors are on the blood lining of your blood vessels. They're on the blood lining of your blood vessels. They're also in your brain. You've heard people that talked about they had clogs, brain clogs, blood clots in the brain, okay? And some people have had some problems with their hearts. Well, these ACE receptors are in your hearts. Now, I'm not making this up, people. How many, you can go on the internet. The NIH did a study in June 2019, all right, that says they can't rule out that the disease, as well as the vaccine, and the only reason I bring the vaccine in here because the vaccine also uses its ACE receptors, all right? And those receptors are all over the body, all right? And so let me stop here and let me hook it up to Ulu. Obviously, what I describe, brothers and sisters, is the fact that, all right, we do not. How much of this information that I shared, and I'm basically using the CDC's website. Essentially, that's what I'm hearing, and a few other periodicals that I was able to bring up. How much have you heard from Howard University Hospital? How much have I said, have you heard from Morehouse? How much have I said, have you heard from Meharry? Okay. How much have I said, have you heard from any black institution of higher learning? Which is why, because those black institutions of higher learning, unfortunately, and I don't want to make it sound that I'm extremely critical of them, because they were not designed to help us. They were designed to have some of us get a so-called training so that we can go and work for the European. And it's been beneficial so that we can share in the American dream. But they have not really helped and worked for us. It's only one institution other than the nation saying this. It's only one other institution that I know of who is talking about, all right, pooling our resources cooperatively using the Ujamaa model, which is family-centered, such that we can identify and support the creation of what we think is necessary to help our people attain economic sovereignty. All right, that's fundamental it. You know, you can set up your own research institutions if it's necessary. You can have your land and set that up and then build any kind of institution you want, and you can have it directed at identifying and working on those kind of diseases that seem to have afflicted us as a result of our stay here, the diseases that seem to afflict us by allowing the Europeans, well, we didn't allow the Europeans, they came in and invaded, you know, Africa, that seemed to allow the disposition of us in the Caribbean, in Jamaica, all right, in Brazil, South America, eventually in the U.S., all right? So we can set those up. We cannot put those in the hands of anybody else. We have to put them in our hands. And see, I don't know of any or too many institutions that's talking about cooperatively pooling our resources to build institutions that is necessary for us. All right, and then giving you a role in it. Don't just go there and say, oh, well, let me donate a couple bucks and then walk away. No, we need your skills, not only the skills that you have in your pocket or in your wallet or in your purse. We need that stuff that's between your two ears, what you got there, and you got something there. If you listen to this program, you have to have something there because otherwise you'd be listening to whatever the shows that they have on the TV. All right, you're not wasting your time doing that. You're not wasting your time. You are using your time to see what we have. All right, go to our website, www.usliftingus.com. All right, there's information there if you're new. If you're a member, go there and go to the back office. All right, see what we have in the back office. All right, begin to see what skills do I have that can help make what I need to have happen materialize. I'm tired of these people, all right, making guinea pigs out of me. And it so happens now, the people, this last point, it's usually the Europeans that are up in a roar. The Europeans is up in a roar because they believe that all this vaccine is doing is to reduce the population, including them. All right, so they're concerned that they won't be. And right now, the only population that they see seem to be doing well in terms of numbers is on the African continent because they got the African population here in the United States contained. But they don't have it, so they're trying to draw all that stuff over there on the African continent. All right, but thank goodness we're still producing kids. Hopefully we can produce kids here a little better than what we have as long as we stop looking at the European as the model of health. They are not the model of health. They're the model of death. And to, you know, a lot of my friends and sisters say, well, you know, not all Europeans are bad. I say you are correct. You know, statistically, you got to have some good Europeans. And I am not in disagreement with that. They are some good Europeans. They just not in power.
Okay.
They're not in power. So they're no good to me if they're not in power. So therefore, I'm not going to concentrate on them trying to get in power because they haven't been in power since they've been in this country. All right, so they haven't been in power, so I'm not looking for them. But I am looking for us because we have the capabilities. We know how much we spend yearly, all right, and we have to reboot. We lost a lot of businesses, all right, during the 2020, you know, over 50% of the black businesses. We only had about 2.6 million, and we lost over half of that. All right, and that's tragic. All right, now we have to try to pick ourselves back up. All right, not everybody could, you know, work from home. They didn't have a home, you know, after some months. They didn't have a home. Go to the website. Look at what we have. Call. But don't just look at it. Call. There's a number you can call. There is email addresses that you can send information to and request information. But whatever you do, do something. Because this boy is not playing it. Pfizer, which is one of the companies, all right, pharmaceuticals, has applied for full license today or yesterday. All right, Moderna did the same thing. All right, okay. So by the end of the year, they will be given full license. So if you've been holed out, they're going to try to ram that vaccine down your throat. And guess what? Moderna is in partnership with NIH. Now, how does a private company be in partnership, you know, I'm not making this up. They got it on their website.
Okay.
NIH got it on their website. They're in partnership. All right. I'm not making this up, folks. Call me a liar, but go to the website. Call
and
me
my understanding is Anthony Fauci gets paid. He has patents.
All right. He's a holder of patents. And a lot of people in his organization. He has patents, you know, and they get that as a result. He's the one that spends that money, circulate that money around. But anyway, look at what we have. We want to stop this. We can't stop this by saying, oh, well, I feel good because I didn't know what you said before, and now I feel good, and now I'm going to go to sleep on it. No, we want you to wake up tomorrow morning and make a commitment. That's what we want you to do. We don't want you just to sleep on it tonight. We want you to make a commitment and tomorrow to do something. Look at the website at the very least. You know, you don't like it, you send us a note. You don't think it's helpful, but, you know, in that in and of itself will tell us that you're looking at it and tell us what you think is helpful. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And, sister, let me stop here. You may want to have something that you want to end with. I think, we might have to have a follow-up on this because there's a lot of information.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, we're
going to have to, because we really didn't scratch the surface on this. This is a lot to go to digest. It's a lot of information that we really have not had. So I'm looking forward to when you will be able to come back and give us some more on this. This has been Dare to Win, the Thursday night program of Us Lifting Us. We thank everyone for joining us tonight. Thank you, Brother Shabaka, for that information. And
we will
be back next Thursday with another discussion on Dare to Win. Peace, family.
If it makes sense.
Peace.
That's a grand day, you know.
Put yourself in action, doing exactly what they want.